Welcome to Section 9, where we talk about IT and information security. I'm Damian Hull.
And I'm Dorothy.
And today we're going to be talking about our network documentation, where we talk about our Fortinet equipment. And that's really your homework, because you're going to be documenting that. And then we're also going to be talking about our VMware server. We're going to be picking one sometime this coming week, so we can go ahead and order that, because I want to get that started. Now, in order for us to be able to do that, though, we have to know what we have and where that's going to go. And since you haven't seen the new Fortinet equipment inside the rack, you don't know what's plugged in there, you don't know how it's configured, I want you to go through some of that.
So let's clarify this. In order for you to make the deadline for the Meraki, you had to configure and set up the Fortinet equipment. And that is what you did. I wasn't part of that part of the project, but now what you want me to do is go and see what you've done and document it. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Okay.
So go through the list here, because I have a list for you.
Okay, so for the firewall, you want me to figure out what's plugged in and where, the IP addresses and subnets, and the firewall rules.
So when it comes to what's plugged into the firewall, that's a bit different than what's plugged into the switch. And the configurations are a little bit different. So what I want you to know is what IP addresses are on the firewall. So when you are looking at some of the logs or some of the information that you're going to get from reports or when you log into the firewall and look at things, you have an idea, oh, these IP addresses are on the firewall. They're supposed to be on the firewall.
Well, in order for me to be able to do the homework you assigned to me about a month ago about the traffic and understanding the traffic in the firewall, I need to be familiar with the IP addresses in our network. The thing that I'm going to have trouble with, and I can tell you this right now, is the firewall rules. Those are tough for me because I'm not really, I don't understand them really well. And I'm assuming you already put some in place, right?
Yes, you have to have them in there in order for the firewall to work.
Right. So when I document those, you're going to have to help me because, you know, I need to know what they mean when they are, and, you know, in the order that they are, you know, they have the hierarchy and you know, what negates what. That's the part that I get really confused.
Yeah. And this is not for you to go in there and understand all the rules all at once. This is just for you to know, hey, we have some rules in here. I'm going to document some of these so I kind of have an idea of what's going on. And it's just there for you to get an overview of what's happening. The most important thing for that is the IP addresses and what's plugged into the firewall.
So pretty much on all the devices, I'm going to need to know the IP addresses, subnets, and
okay,
VLANs.
So what's the second thing on the list?
The switch.
Okay, what about the switch are we looking at?
I'm going to need to know what's plugged in and where, and also the subnets and VLANs.
Right, so you need to know these things because when you walk up to the switch, we need to know, okay, what's plugged into it, and then what subnet is that device on? And then when we add in things like our Synology disk station, our VMware server, where is it plugged into? What subnets are we going to use for that? How are we going to manage these things? And then when we get into the lab side of things where we have our VMware environment in place and we have, you know, multiple VMs in there, what subnets are we going to assign to those VMs?
So that way we don't step over each other.
Exactly, exactly. So this is not meant to be overly complicated. You look at the configuration, you document what you see. You go to the physical devices, you look at what's there, you document what you see. And little by little, you'll begin to understand how this is supposed to work.
Well, it's basically like if you were to get a job on a network that you've never been familiar with, and you had to actually document it because there wasn't any documentation, that's basically what I would be doing.
Exactly.
Okay. And here's the thing, though. I mean, and just, you know, humor me on this. When it comes to the firewall rules, I'm going to need help documenting them because in order for me to document them properly, I need to understand them.
And that's perfectly fine. But don't worry about that.
I'm not. I'm just saying I'm going to do pretty much, I know how to do the subnets. I can figure out what's plugged into what. I can look up an IP address and go, okay, this is the subnet that is in and document it and see, you know, how many addresses are in there and what goes to where. I can do that. I don't have a problem with that. I'm just kind of letting you know what I think is going to be the hard part for me. Okay, so then let's move to the wireless access point. I'm going to need to document the SSIDs, the subnets, the radio frequencies, and what do you mean by health?
So in the Fortinet device, and you'll see this on enterprise level equipment, I don't know if Meraki has this. I don't think that it does, at least on the device that we had. You know, our previous Meraki firewall had built-in Wi-Fi, but I don't recall it ever saying anything about the health of the wireless network. So in the Fortinet device, because it's an actual access point and it's more enterprise level, it actually has this feature in there where it tells you the health of the Wi-Fi network. And basically what it's doing is it's saying, are there any other wireless devices out there? Are they stepping on my frequencies, right? Is the frequencies that I'm using, are there other devices out there using the same frequency?
Oh, okay. I need to understand something. I've seen the health of a disk, and it tells you if it's corrupted. Now you're talking about the health of the wireless access point, and you're saying that, is it going to look at other networks outside of our network and say, hey, these are interfering with the frequencies? Or are you talking about something actually being plugged into our network that is not supposed to be?
No. When you're talking about radio, you're talking about frequencies that are open to others, right? So your next door neighbor's wireless access point.
And that's what I was asking.
Is could potentially interfere with your wireless access point. So then the overall health of your wireless network is going to be less than it would be if that was the only one there. So there are things you have to look at in order to be able to see those kinds of things. And fortunately for us, Fortinet has some of those tools that other vendors may not have. Like Linksys doesn't have that, right? Because that's for the home. But Meraki, I don't think, at least from what I've seen, they don't have sort of that health monitoring thing. At least on our firewall, they didn't have that. I'll have to check and see if that's something they offer in their actual wireless access points. But I don't recall seeing anything like that.
So then if you determine that there is somebody else interfering with that frequency, what do? Just change to a different channel?
You might be able to do that, but if you're in a neighborhood or you're in a crowded office space, you may not have a choice.
Well, that's what I was saying, is like, how do you determine, do you assign the radio frequency or the channel by subnet? Are you able to do that?
No, that's not how it works.
Okay.
So we're not going to get into too much of that just yet, because you're going to have to do some homework. And that's the whole point about this checklist. I want you to use this as a guide. It may take you a couple of weeks to get some of these things done, but this is your guide, and you're going to go through and you're going to look at that, and you're going to say, okay, what are these SSIDs? What are these frequencies that we're talking about? What is this health thing that we're talking about? Those things may take a bit because that's new, and a lot of people don't realize that Wi-Fi networks can become complicated, and you have to think about these things. Because a lot of times people think that the wireless network is just something that you turn on, because that's how it works at home. I turn on my little box and it gives me Wi-Fi and I'm good to go. Well, in an enterprise environment, it's a bit more complicated than that. And since we have enterprise equipment, we can now see some of those things. And so that's kind of what I want you to get used to.
Okay.
So for the most part, this is just going to be you documenting things and making sure that things are, that information is there for us for future planning, like for our VMware server. If we have any issues, if we want to make changes, where's that documentation going to be? So what's the next thing on the list?
Well, before you get into that, where are we documenting this in?
We will talk about that later. It's something we're going to have to think about. But okay. What's the next thing on the list?
So the next thing is the network diagram. You want me to do a basic network diagram with a Lucid chart? Fancy version.
So here's how this is going to work. You're going to do a basic network diagram, and all I want you to do is use our little note-taking app in our iPad, and you're just going to draw one.
Right.
That's all I want you to do. Later on, you're going to go and do a fancy Lucid chart version.
Okay.
You're going to figure out how that works. You're going to put it all in there. And then I want you to show me, even in your basic diagram, how our device is connected. How is the switch in the firewall connected? How is the wireless access point connected? What does that look like? And then what subnets and VLANs do we have in there, right? I want you to say what subnets are on our Wi-Fi side. I want you to put down the subnet for the firewall, the subnet for
the switch.
What kind of subnets do we have on the switch, right? And so there's going to be some things that, I'm going to have kind of like a format for you to follow when you get to the Lucidchart side.
And what about the static IP addresses?
So if there's like a device, like a printer, what's the static IP address of the printer?
Okay.
Right. So you're going to want to have that in the diagram. Most things are going to be DHCP assigned, but they're going to be things like your printer, your servers, they're going to have static addresses. Well, what are they? And then how is that static address assigned? Is it manually added to the device, or is it a DHCP address that is reserved for that particular device?
Want that documented, how it's done?
Correct.
Okay. And then another thing you have in here is where are the logs?
I want you to know where the logs live. Now, in our case, we don't do a whole lot of logging locally. And my understanding of Fortinet equipment is that you can actually get the Fortinet with a hard drive on it, and that's where the logs would go. Well, we don't have that. And so our logs end up in the cloud. Now, one of the issues we have with the cloud piece, since we're not using 40 Manager Cloud, we're not using 40 Analyzer Cloud, we would have had a lot of space in 40 Analyzer Cloud to log a lot of stuff. Now, unfortunately, 40 Analyzer Cloud didn't really work for us, and there's certain issues with it. Some of the features I would like it to have, it doesn't have yet. They're working on that. But that's, again, one of the reasons why we chose to go to 40 Gate Cloud. But we don't have a subscription for that. And because we don't have a subscription, we only get 7 days worth of logs in the cloud. And for us, that's perfectly fine. Because what we're going to do is we're going to use those reports to help us understand what's going on with our network, with our devices. And then if something major happens, like there's an actual alert that tells us that an interface is down or some security event has happened, that's going to go into our ticket system. So that's going to end up in Jitbit. So we're going to have this information stored in various places depending on how we get it delivered. If it's an alert that's, high priority or critical, that's in our ticket system. If it's a report of some kind, that's also going to go to our ticket system. So even though we only have 7 days of logs in the cloud, all the important stuff is going to end up in our ticket system so that we have access to that later on.
Well, that sounds good.
So all of this, I just want you to think of as a learning process. The big thing for you is to just look at how things are connected and then document that in some sort of a network diagram. And then you have to share that with me because I have to have that information too. And you're right, we do need to figure out where we're going to put this information. Could go into Jitbit in our knowledge base. Could go in...
Monday.
Well, it wouldn't go in Monday because Monday is more for project management. It's not necessarily for documentation, although we could find a way to use it that way. But we could also put it in Google Docs, right? So we could just put it in as a PDF. Maybe you do your little diagram, do it as a PDF, push it into Google Docs, and then we have it there. Or we need not Google Docs, but Google Drive, and then I could access that as a PDF and see that. So we have options, and we'll figure out what works best for us.
So you said you were going to talk a little bit about the VMware server, and I know you've been kind of doing a lot of research and thinking about this. So why don't you go into why are we getting a server, and then what are we getting?
So the reason why I want us to get the VMware server, and I've kind of talked about this in the past, we have some projects we want to work on, right? You have your Windows 10 stuff that you're trying to learn. You're trying to get certified for that. So the VMware server can actually help you because you can go ahead and set up VMs with, 2019 server. You can have Windows 10 in there, and then you can play around with the domain environment and start learning how to do some of the stuff that you see in your videos and do it all yourself. You don't have to have a pre-configured system someplace that you access. You do the whole thing yourself. And I think that's going to be a benefit to you because then you get hands-on experience doing that. I also have some Windows things I'd like to do. But then we also have some security things we would also want to play around with. So in my case, one project that I have on my list is Security Onion. And Security Onion has a bunch of security tools like Suricata, which is an intrusion detection system. And all of this is based on open source software. It's a Linux platform. And we could use our VMware environment to test some of that stuff and learn how to use that. It's one of those things that's a long-term project because things like Suricata and a bunch of other stuff that's in there really does take a long time to understand and learn. And it goes into your OSI model, packets, and a bunch of other stuff. So if we get our VMware server in there, we'll be able to do all these different things. So little by little, I think things are coming together. But when it comes to our VMware server, we have to start talking about, do we want a powerful box? Or do we want something that's less powerful and a little cheaper so we can save some money that way? And I'm kind of debating, and you and I are going to have to think about this. And I'm going to put in the show notes the two systems I think we're going to go with, one of the two. And then I have said in the past that we may go with two servers, right? And then we buy VMware Essentials, and then we can do things like vMotion. I'm not entirely sure that's something that we have to have. And so if we were to get the more expensive server that's a little bit more powerful, we could do most of what we want with the free version of VMware. We wouldn't have to get Essentials, although that's not that expensive. So those are things we have to think about. And the reason why I'm leaning towards the more expensive system, it's not hugely more expensive. We'll have to do the pricing on that and see what the difference is. But the reason why I want to move in that direction versus the less expensive one is that I don't want to buy something and then find out it doesn't have the power to do the kinds of things we want to do. Especially if we're sharing that, like if you're doing your project, I'm doing my project, the network is going to be just fine because now we have enterprise level firewall, we have a gigabit switch. It's not going to be the bottleneck because before we did our VMware server, our tiny little VMware server with our 100 meg Cisco switches, and that worked just fine. So the gigabit is an extra added bonus for us because we're now going to have all the network bandwidth we need to be able to do pretty much whatever we want. And it's really more than we need because it's just the two of us, right? But there's a few things we need to talk about this coming week where we decide, do we want the more expensive server or the less expensive one? And do we want one server or two servers? Or do we want one server now, one server later?
So what about the two servers that we have right now? Those are not useful? Like the smaller one, that the portable one that I used to take to the library?
No, those won't work for us. So when we look at our VMware server, and you and I are going to sit down and look at that, because you really haven't seen some of the stuff that I've been looking at. So you and I are going to sit down, we're going to look at some of the options, and we're going to begin to kind of think about some of the labs that we want to do, what that's going to require, and which one do we think is going to be the way to go. Here's what I'm thinking right now. I'm thinking of getting the more expensive server with the better processor. RAM-wise, we're going to be fine. It's going to be, I think we're going to go with 128 gigs of RAM, and then it's just a battle between which processor do we get. Because the processor is going to determine, how quick this thing is going to be. And I'm not entirely sure that we really need something that is beefy, that has power to it. And that's why, if you look at our little Dell workstation that I purchased recently, that's got an i5 processor in it with 8 gigs of RAM. Because we don't do a whole lot with that little box. It was never designed to do a whole lot. I went with a cheaper processor and 8 gigs of RAM so we can run a lot of applications, but we're not trying to crunch a lot of numbers, right? We're not using the processor side of things. We're going to surf the internet, maybe open up some Google Docs type stuff, which is also on the internet. And there's not a whole lot of things going on locally on the box outside of the browser. So I didn't need to have, an i7. So when we look at the VMware server, we kind of have to ask ourselves, do we need something that's got that extra power to it? If we're only going to get one server, then I think the more powerful box is the way to do that. We could also say, well, how about we do two small servers? We get VMware Essentials and we can practice vMotion. but that you and I are going to have to spend the week deciding if VMotion is something we must have or if that's just kind of an added bonus.
Well, how common is VMotion out in the IT world right now? I mean, if we were to have a business, is this something that we would do all the time?
People use it.
Do they?
Yes,
they do. Often?
Yes.
Okay.
And it's not something that people talk about a whole lot because in smaller environments, you may not use it very often, but it's there.
I think, and this is my view, we've decided that we want a certain set of tools by the end of the year. You know, we want to be able to acquire a certain amount of tools. You have your enterprise views of the things that you want to do with the enterprise, you know, security thing. So I think for us, we need to sit down and figure out where does this new purchase fit into the goals that we're trying to achieve and the projects that we're trying to do, and what are the requirements of those projects. And that's the reason why I ask you about my little server, because my little server, I was able to actually, you know, install the free version of the server, the Windows server in there, attach it to the domain, you know, do the whole thing. And I was fine with that. We didn't need to purchase an additional server. You know, with Windows 10, I'm looking at a lot of the things that I'm seeing in my videos and the things that I want to do. You know, as I'm documenting things, I'm like, okay, I want to try this live. I want to see how it works. I want to do this migration. You know, I want to move this user or you know, have to fix a corrupted user and different things that you and I talked about before. So, you know, maybe we can talk about with some of the equipment that we have, am I able to do that or am I not? I mean, I have my i7 System 76 laptop that you can probably have an entire network on it because it has a lot of RAM. It has, you know.
There's limitations there. And so there are some things I think you're going to be able to use your laptop for, and it's going to be great for that. Because when you want to learn something about, let's say, Server 2019 or Windows 10, you know, you can have a local VM on your laptop, and that's going to work just fine. But when you want to go and do an actual lab environment where you have, you know, Server 2019, maybe two of them, and then you have a couple of Windows 10 machines, and they're slightly different in terms of configuration, and you're using group policy, then your laptop's not going to work for that.
Okay.
So there's a lot of things that we're going to be doing that's more enterprise level. It's going to take some time, and you're going to have to get used to some of these things because it's going to be a lot. And I think that the more powerful processor is probably the way to do that. But sometimes, you know, you don't really end up using it because you have all these VMs in there, but they're not really using up a lot of processing power. They're just using up a lot of RAM. So there's some things in there that I'm not entirely sure of just yet. Because we need to do what you said. We need to look at some of our projects and kind of at least do some basic evaluations of the kinds of things you want to do versus the kinds of things I want to do. Will they work? What do we need for that? What are the system requirements for some of this stuff? And then go from there. And then I'm hoping that we can order this server sooner than later. But we don't have to rush it.
Let's just do this. Let's put the two options that you're looking at, and maybe some of our listeners, if they have any experience with them or if they're familiar with it, they can give us some feedback on.
Well, we put a list of the things we were looking at in a couple episodes ago or something like that, and I actually didn't put in one of the ones I was looking at, but that one I think is a little too expensive for us.
Yeah,
and I put in some other ones in there, and so again I'm gonna put a list of the two servers that I'm thinking about getting. One's a little bit more expensive than the other, but I think either one would work okay. So it's something we have to think about. But let's go ahead and recap here. And I want to talk about some of the security stuff. Since we're supposed to be about security, I'm trying to kind of put more security stuff in our podcast here.
What exactly, if you don't mind me asking, what is that security onion thing?
We'll get to that.
Okay.
So let me recap here. So we are going to be documenting our Fortinet equipment. And once you have some of that documented, we can begin talking about our new VMware server. And the big thing here for me is that most of our Fortinet stuff is already taken care of, right? We've got that in place. It's working. When you do your documentation, We're going to have to modify things a little bit, but for the most part, that's working, right? And then when we think about our VMware server and some of the projects we want to work on, you have your Windows 10. I have my some of my security stuff I want to do, like Security Onion. These are things that, you know, when you're putting a lab like this together, sometimes it's a bit tricky to figure out what devices do you need to have in there to be able to do the kinds of things you would like to do. And I think that what we have, at least in our planning process so far, is something that's pretty cool. And some of the devices that are out there, some of the things you get access to, the fact that we can get 2019 server for free, we can get VMware for free, that's huge. And then Security Onion, which is something that's been around for a bit, and I haven't sat down and actually tried to play with that, supposed to be really good. And I got this idea from Black Hills Information Security, one of their webinars.
They're awesome, aren't they?
Yeah, and one of their webinars, they talked about Security Onion and how good that thing is. And again, it's something I just haven't had the time to play with. So that's what I envisioned for our lab. And so I want to be able to do things with Windows 10, with Windows 2019 server. There's some security stuff I'd like to play around with there, but also starting to get into more of the Kali Linux type stuff, doing packet captures with, what is that thing? I can't think of it now. Wireshark.
Yeah.
We go back to Nmap. We can do stuff with Security Onion.
Well,
you know,
we have a Raspberry Pi that we were actually doing some of the security stuff or trying to, do things with Kali Linux, but, you know, it never got off the ground.
Yeah, and I think that the VMware environment, if we do it right, is going to give us the flexibility that we need to be able to do lots of things, right? So we can play around with, like I said.
But we got to have the basics in place and things configured properly to be able to get that off the ground.
Exactly. And if anybody is out there thinking about putting a lab together, you don't necessarily have to have the kinds of things that we have. You know, you can get a workstation that can do virtualization with enough RAM in there, and you can play around with different Linux distributions. You can play around with Server 2019. You can play around with Windows 10. You don't necessarily have to have the kind of things that we're trying to do with, you know, Fortinet and VMware and all this other stuff.
We just decided to get a set of skills and we're doing the best that we can with, investing in the equipment to be able to get those skills under our belt. And sometimes, you know, those things are expensive to be able to do that. But, you know, you may have different skills that you want to attain that you don't need to be spending that much money on, I guess.
Yeah, but when you get into more of the enterprise environments, it's a nice thing to have a lab because then you can play around with some of this stuff and you're not doing it on, you know, the production network. It's your own little environment. You get to learn the things you think you have issues with, the things that you're not too sure about, and you can do that in an environment where you don't have to worry about breaking something that's production.
Well, and the thing that I do want to do, and you and I had this conversation before, I don't want to just get my Windows 10 certification and go, oh, look, I'm so pretty, I'm Windows 10 certified. You know what I mean? I really want to make sure that by the time I get done with that, I've had enough practice on the lab. I'm able to use the tools. It's not just understanding what the book says or what the videos say. It's actually putting into practice and see how it actually works and determine, you know, like I'm excited about God mode. You know, if I was a sysadmin, that would be like the tool on my desk that I would absolutely adore because it has everything in there. I don't have to click three or four different times. You know, I can put the command and I can have everything, like a menu of everything that I ever need, and then just click on it and just get to it. Does that really work? You know, I need to see it. You know, I need to actually sit down and figure it out. But anyway.
Yeah, and that's where I think that VMware environment is going to help us out a lot. So you have your laptop, your workstation that can do VMs. And so your laptop, you know, you have that here at home, your workstation's in the lab. But to have that VMware environment where you can connect from home, you can connect from someplace else, you can remotely turn on the box, because most of the time we're going to have it turned off if we're not using it.
Right.
And then you can spin up all your VMs you want to have in there and do the kinds of things you need to do. I think that's going to be great.
oh, and I want to learn how to set up a VPN, you know, and then actually kind of, you know, I mean, there's just so many things. And
yeah, so I think that we have the beginnings of a pretty cool lab environment where we have our Fortinet equipment. You know, we have the two FortiGate 60Fs. We're going to do VPNs between the two. We can do VPNs for mobile devices, your laptop maybe, because they have, you know, the one of the things that I think, now that everybody's kind of working from home these days.
Well, and that's one of the skills that I think is going to be marketable.
Yeah, so one of the things I thought was kind of cool with if you compare, you know, Fortinet to say, Cisco, I think Fortinet does a much better job with their VPN connections than Cisco does, especially if you're talking about, let's say, workers with laptops. Because the Cisco side, they make you pay extra for that, which is something you can think about when you buy the device. But I think it's harder to get that to work than it is to get the Fortinet VPN connection up and running. So there's just a lot of things that we're going to be able to look at in terms of things like, you know, Fortinet versus ASA or our VMware environment and all that. So there's just a lot of cool things that I think we're going to be able to do once we get all this stuff in place.
No, it's pretty exciting.
Yeah,
and now that we're homebound,
there's no
better time to do that.
So anything else you want to add?
No. You?
No, I think that's it. We have a lot to do. Again, you're going to do your documentation of the network. We're going to think about our VMware server. Hopefully by the next episode, we will have our VMware server ordered, I'm hoping, because I really do want to get that in place sooner than later. So I think that's it for now. If you have any comments or questions, you can go to section9.us and send us a ticket. If you want to see our show notes, you can also go to Section 9, where we'll have links to those VMware servers that we're thinking about getting. And thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening.